Welcome, folks, once again to the Slowpokes at PAX. Yes. As always, I am Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
See how smooth that was?
Yes.
I can do any intro, of them.
David, you're the practice professional.
God, I sounded so much like Trump then, didn't I? Fuck.
You're the practice intellectual, which, you know, very un-Trump-like. And I am the off-the-cuff, random, quirky...
Just so many hats, so many capes.
You can't even see how many hats I'm wearing.
Do you know what John did on a Tuesday afternoon once?
What?
He went to an art gallery just on a whim. How kooky and out there John is.
I mean, that sounds like something I would do.
Yeah,
so yes.
I know. It's a very plain, boring day for you.
Yeah.
But we are not having a plain, boring day because we are at day three of PAX.
This
is day three for me, day two for you,
yes.
Because you're weak.
That is correct. I took a break for my own personal health.
Okay, that's actually very strong
for
you to admit. And I want to say in this moment, congratulations. And everyone else who needs to take time away from PAX, good on you for doing that. You do you. Drink and eat.
It's super important to watch yourself because these conventions can just be overwhelming with everybody here so loud, all the noise in the background.
So, day three of PAX.
Day three of PAX.
What do we want to talk about? Do we want to start with one of the PAX Rising games that I missed?
Yes, we should.
So, fun fact about PAX Rising.
Yes.
It's called PAX Rising for one thing. I called it the PAX Indie Showcase, which is what it used to be called.
And I totally let you do that, even though I knew it was something else.
PAX Rising... goes from one wall of the expo hall up to this cafe, or so I thought, because it also goes that far again in the other direction.
Yes, yes.
So I missed half of it for our first thing. I wanted to mention one game that I've managed to find time to get to today, and I'm going to try and squeeze the rest of them in. Chroma Shift.
Yes, I talked to the guys at Chroma Shift. How about you tell us about it?
So Chroma Shift is a puzzle platformer, co-op for the most part.
Yes, co-op!
But one of the things that I really like that they do is the whole Snipper Clips thing, where if you don't have any friends... you can play just with a single controller switching back between the two avatars. But it's a side-scrolling sort of puzzle platformer.
I think it's called 2.5D.
2.5D,
Camera sits kind of outside of a diorama.
I know for a fact that it's called 2.5D.
Well, thank you very much, David. But yeah, it's diorama-esque.
Two-dimensional plane, three-dimensional graphics.
Yeah.
So you have your two little avatars, and you have to navigate these puzzles based on color. So there are certain gates you can only go through if you're a particular color, and I'm sure a bunch of other puzzles like elevators and doors and weapons that only work under particular circumstances.
And your characters, they have different abilities as well, don't they?
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, okay. Well, they do. I can't remember the characters' names because, again, I am the worst at names.
There's Thin One and Less Than Thin One.
I think they're named after Greek characters, so I'm going to go with Omega and... that's enough. I'm done.
All right.
I'm done with Greek letters.
So stop making stuff up, and let's talk about what we actually know.
Yeah, so the two characters, one's a big, heavy, like, loader robot that can throw the other one into the air.
They're robots as well, by the way.
By the way, they're robots. Yeah, so one can throw the other robot up into the air, and the one that can be thrown around can turn into a ball to easily move around.
Oh, cool.
Like that.
So the whole look of it is very, like, kind of neon. Like, most of the level environments that I was seeing were black, and then they have these, like, sort of neon highlights that represent the different colors of the puzzle mechanics and stuff. To change colors, you put yourself in the path of what they called color-changing orbs, but I think of as a color cannon, because they're basically just these big guns that go bang, and then you're a different color.
Interesting.
So there are two ways that you can change. There are single-color orbs that change just the person who gets hit, or double orbs that change the entire team if any of them get hit.
Oh, no matter where they are?
Yeah, so you can do these things where you'll go a single orb to get through a particular gate, and then the other person on the far side of the gate will get hit with a double orb to force the change they can't actually get access to, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it looks like a pretty interesting, fun puzzle game. I might be interested in it.
Especially with it being co-op.
Yes.
And also, my favorite kind of co-op, where you can manage it to be a single-player game.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I would rather them put in something that is not perfect but kind of works than just not do a single player at all. Or, like, I don't mind when a game gets janky to give you a little bit more of an experience.
Yeah, and I didn't get a chance to put my hands on it, so I can't say how smooth it was, that, like, single-player manipulation.
Yep.
But they're aiming for a release on PC January 2018. Other consoles, maybe after that. The team is Dev or Die, if you want to take a look at them. And, yeah, that's Chroma Shift.
Awesome. Nice.
All right, what do you have for us, John?
Well, I haven't done very much apart from lose at Splendor, which I'm very good at, by the way.
Isn't that an artificial sweetener?
No. So there's a table. So one of the wonderful things about PAX is there's a whole board game section.
Okay.
And one of the things they do there, I'm explaining to you like you don't know.
Well, I might know this, but I have no idea what Splendor is.
Yeah,
so please keep explaining.
They do tournaments. And Splendor is a gem collection collection kind of game.
Like a board game.
Yeah, yeah. It's
okay,
a board
cool.
game. Yeah, where you collect... Because there are board games here at PAX, not just video games.
Yeah, we mentioned that on the previous episode, the whole board game library thing, where they dedicate literally half of their expo space to free play shit.
Yeah, yeah. And I lost at that, so I didn't collect enough gems at the right time and was just narrowly defeated. But after that, I did go and have a look at... They have a couple of booths here for educational sort of groups.
Yeah, no, that's very, very cool. Mm-hmm. So you'll see some more... established groups like certain universities and TAFEs and stuff, yeah. But then you also see a couple of cool little educational programs.
Yeah, and so the one I saw was the Australian STEM Video Game Challenge.
Okay, right? Tell
Which
me about
is
that.
A thing where kids from high school can join groups of up to four, and basically they have to construct a game around a theme. Mm. I think this year's theme was reactions.
Oh, so in a way, it's kind of a jam, but yeah. I guess you're not really jamming.
It's something you can do. You do at school with a mentor,
okay.
usually one of the IT... teachers or something like that, and they help you design the game.
Just thinking of how inappropriate any of the staff at my school would have been in that job. It just would have been completely underwhelming.
You've got to remember when we went to school, it was a while ago, you know, dinosaurs roamed the earth.
The IT team at my school was especially bad, though. We had one particular guy who did that thing where he deliberately tried to be unhelpful so people would ask him for help less frequently.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, it looks really interesting. At PAX, they actually had some of the winners.
Cool.
They even did a conference talk, and Hex even came out and awarded the prize.
That's Hex from Good Game?
Yes, Hex from Good Game. Stephanie...
I say from Good Game. Hex, who is known as someone from Good Game,
from
but
Good
no
Game.
Longer Good Gaming, yeah. doing screenplay, I
yeah,
think
screenplay
is what she does
now. Yeah, but it looks really cool, and anything to get like kids designing, actually designing games... And being able to get a prize for it as well, that's a great motivation for
yeah.
kids in schools.
I think that, for me, I've mentioned this in the Slowpoke's bio about myself. I'm one of those people who has always felt very much at a loss. And, like, I studied game design
yep.
at university for a little while, and that was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I'd had programs like that gave me a better idea of what was involved in the process, that perhaps it fostered more of a self-reliance as far as game development, self-learning and that kind of stuff, I think I would be in a much better position
yeah.
to have actually achieved that goal when I went to uni and realized, you know, how that stuff actually integrated into what game design is about. So all the programs like real-world programs that set people up to not just go on to further education, but also just go, hey, I can be a fucking indie. Fuck you, education.
Yeah, screw you, degree.
Yeah, I got what I want from this STEM program in my fucking school, and now... I'm making fucking Thomas was alone and shit.
Oh, David, such passionate words.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's just great. I'm glad to see them here at PAX. If you have any students, if you have any kids, you know anybody in high school, see if the school can do it.
And if they can't do this one, I'm sure there's other programs that you might be able to mm-hmm. find somewhere. Just look yeah. into it because let kids make games.
Yeah. I'm totally an advocate for people going through school to... be able to explore what they find interesting rather than what they think they should do.
Yeah.
If making games is what you find interesting, you should totally do that at high school. That's the perfect time to do something that you might not do forever.
Yeah.
Right?
And anything that you think is going to be reliable now is not going to be reliable in fucking 5 years. So just do good shit. Do stuff that's fun. So that's very cool. Education stuff. And like I said, that's not the only group here, but that's a nice one
yeah.
to focus on. Some other stuff that I got up to at PAX in the intervening time was I managed to catch that David Gaeta Q&A in
the
Diversity Lounge.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was really, really interesting because David Gaeta, for those of you who don't know, has been involved in a lot of BioWare projects, Baldur's Gate, most of the Dragon Ages, yep. and is... what's the word I'm looking at? Recognized
yeah,
for a strong diversity of his writing cast
yes.
and character cast. Character casts. My God. It's third day of PAX. Leave me alone. I'm so tired.
Yeah, I was judging David with my eyes.
Yeah.
My eyes of judgment.
But no, that talk was absolutely fascinating. I was really tossing up between going to that or going to the Child's Play auction, which is just a really nice, relaxed thing to do on the third
yeah.
day of PAX. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad I went to that. You know, it's a Q&A, so like 90% of the time was just spent answering questions of the people in the crowd.
Right, right, right.
And there was a topic that came up in one of our episodes. We talked about like the player sexual kind of...
Yes.
He talked about that a lot.
Yeah. One of our great friends, Alex, gave us that term.
Yeah, and I didn't know this, but, you know, he was familiar with the term and, you know, used it. So apparently it's an established term.
Cool.
And, you know, he talked about the gamification of romance systems in games. That was a question that I asked him. And the person who gave me the microphone after I gave it back gave me a sage nod at the wisdom and insight of the question.
That was the question I would have asked. So, yes, you are a true intellectual.
Yes, I am just as smart as John.
Oh, that's not a dig. Don't be mean like that.
But no, he gave a very fascinating answer, and it was a lot of his questions were quite complex, and they moved into other stuff. But one of the things that he said was he talked about the approval system that had been used in the Dragon Age system, and you know, one of the things I said was like, you know, you can just go up to people and you get points for saying the right thing. Doesn't that encourage basically a sociopathic approach?
Yes.
He was saying that, well, one of the things that we moved into after that was we tried to have characters' approval based on player actions rather than just the dialogue choices that they made in those little interactions. And he talked about the fact that if you're going to have a system like this in the game, it's never going to be perfect because every element of the system would have to be infinitely more complex for every detail you add to it. And, you know, that was one of the things that he said was disappointing about how it's so much more difficult to include polyamorous non-monogamous relationships because the number of variables is just exponential.
Yeah.
And like, he said that with disappointment, obviously. It wasn't dismissive, but it was still a very interesting, an interesting insight into, like, juggling the mechanical systems and also what that means for writing in the story. And so it was a really fascinating Q&A.
If there was a game jam I would ever sponsor, it would be one about making games about relationships and, like, a relationship design thing.
That's part of the reason I'm really interested in playing something like Dream Daddy.
Yeah.
Because I also saw David Gator in a Writing for Games panel.
Yeah.
And one of the questions was like, you know, what kind of writing do you think is fascinating? And what writing do you think is some of the most powerful that you played that you did not write?
Yeah.
And he pointed to The Last of Us as that. And one of the things that he brought up in that description of why he liked it is that it worked because the player did not have agency. Because the player couldn't change it through player decision, it made the ending of that game more powerful.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's very interesting to think about that and think about something like Dream Daddy and then think about something like Mass Effect or Dragon Age, which is somewhere in the middle of those two things.
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, I haven't played Dream Daddy, but I have played other dating sims. And the dating sims, I think, are the most extreme example of the gamification of romance systems.
Yes.
Where you would think if that's all you're doing, you'd have more flexibility to make it less mechanical, right?
Mm, yeah, no, it's weird. I mean, I used to play dating sims back in the Newgrounds days as flash games where they were probably less than, what's the term for something that's a bit in, it's like, it's a bit dodgy.
Yeah.
It's a bit off.
Let's be honest. When we say adult games, we do not mean games with mature themes targeted at an adult audience.
We mean
a different kind of flash game that you might find.
And the word I was looking for is problematic. however, I am interested to see what this new crop of dating sims with all of the years in between have done.
Yeah.
And I always struggle with that gamification and just feeling like I'm entering coins in a slot machine. I almost wish there was like a random element to romances. But like, you don't want to block players off from content.
Yeah.
But like, sometimes I'd be like, well, you know, life's a bit random. And like, maybe it'd be nice to have a little bit more variety there and maybe just forcing people not to get options. And anyway, it's difficult. There's a whole talk about like how to do this kind of stuff that I'm really interested in. But
I think one of the things that you said there that was kind of interesting was like this rise of all these different games that have like more modern or more contemporary dating sims.
Mm.
One of the things that Gator spoke about, which I thought was very interesting, was the disincentivization to make games diverse. So he was like, somebody asked something along the lines of why is it taking so long for games to have diversity in them? And the first thing he said was they are much more diverse now than they were 5 years ago.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
We are now at a point where I didn't think about this at all is no longer an excuse because we've saturated the conversation. And that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
But one of the other things he said was that when you have big budget games, you have to ask the question, do I make my protagonist female or a person of color? Do I include homosexual relationships in the game? It's difficult to, quote, win that decision.
Right.
If you do nothing, the worst thing that you're called is as bad as everyone else.
Right.
But if you try something
and
new
fail,
right? Yeah. So there's, regardless of success, you try something new, there are going to be a number of people who hate change and are bigots who are going to criticize you and harass you on one hand.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there are going to be people who want new stuff, who want more diverse characters, who are going to be disappointed if you don't meet their expectations.
Yeah.
And there are also going to be the kinds of people who will never think anything is good enough. Now, I want to make this clear. These were words that he was using.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important that when we talk about this stuff, understanding the frustration and disappointment of people who are underserved in games is very important. And he was very much speaking from a perspective of empathy like that.
Yeah, it's a very real feeling. You can't dismiss people out of
hand. One of the things that he said is that without intending to, people who want more for very, very good reasons can actually make it harder for some...
As a whole.
They are in some ways inadvertently discouraging innovation by focusing on what innovation does wrong rather than focusing on games that are refusing to change at all. And I think that's an interesting idea, that like by wanting things to be better, that we are inadvertently...
Disincentivizing.
Discouraging some developers from taking that risk.
Yeah.
And it makes sense when you think about it. But at the same time, keep doing it, please, because it still needs to happen.
That's a good point. I think that's the negativity around games, like coverage and way people think about games.
Towards antagonism and stuff like that. Like, I think that the important thing with that is the messages should remain unchanged.
Yeah.
I think it's just more about whether or not you take on the role of a harasser when talking about these messages.
Sure.
I think a good blanket rule, if you're ever considering talking about anything online, don't harass people while you do it. I think that's a good, safe way to move forward in that conversation.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Avoiding harassment is probably a good idea as like a general rule.
Don't do crime.
Oh, yeah, that's
I'll
right.
I'll just say this. Don't do crime. Any crime,
now,
don't do it.
Those are the words of David. But they do represent the podcast. So don't do crimes.
Don't do crimes.
Yep. I think we can both agree on that.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Right now, I haven't done very much, apart from, like I said, Lose Its Splendor and talk to the STEM Game Challenge. I'm really looking forward to going to some more of those indies and talking to them about their game.
Yeah. I really do have to make sure I make the time.
I don't want to be like the horse trainers. Like, but we've got a very good showing this year at PAX, and some of the games there look really good.
That filly's got a lot of spirit.
Yes.
Everything someone says in that accent sounds sexist.
Yeah, that's true.
I love this gin and tonic. No, dude.
Yeah, don't say that accent. But yeah, I'm really interested just to go through some of those games and talk to people a bit more.
Yeah, all of these panels I have lined up, I'm not going to go to anymore. Like, when you're sitting at home and going through the events, you're just like, oh, man, there's too many panels. I've got to see all the panels. And I'm just looking at these now. That's not really for me. Like, it's a cool idea. It sounds like a cool panel. But what am I going to get out of that?
I mean, like... I don't come to PAX for panels. And this is the great thing about PAX, though. There are many reasons to come.
Yes, exactly. Right?
And I can come and not see any panels, which I've done this year, and have a totally valid and great time.
Yeah.
Board games and games and everything.
The worst thing about a panel is that you can read the description and they're amazing, but I sometimes wonder if it's written by the people who are going to appear on it.
Mm.
Because some of those descriptions are so fascinating and so interesting. And then you go, like, I went into the overclocking panel.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to be really fascinating. And the first half of it kind of was.
Yeah.
But then the second half was just so dry and so dull. And it's like, I'm never going to put liquid nitrogen on something. Why am I here?
Yeah.
And sometimes you just get really bad conflicts as well, like the David Gator thing, which I'm so, so glad I went to because it was so fucking fascinating, right? Two, three times as good as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I'm so glad you went so I can digest the information vicariously over weeks.
Yeah.
As I do, the parasite that I am, sucking information out of you, David.
I also saw the great debate that had Lawrence Leung.
Yes.
Appeared in that as
oh,
well.
Oh, really?
And Lawrence Leung is one of these people who, whenever I have the opportunity to digest something that he's produced, I'm like, oh, yeah, that'll be kind of interesting. I like his show. I saw that thing about magic tricks. And then I'll watch it and I'll be like, how did I forget how fucking funny this guy is?
I know, right?
He's such a smart, funny dude.
Everything I see him in is just amazing.
And so he, in this great debate, was incredible.
The topic of the great debate?
Whether it's better to play games or watch people playing games.
Ooh,
and now it's a comedy debate, everybody, so chill out. Chill out. Don't tweet at us, okay?
Because I heard that, and I always read those debate things, and I go, bleh.
But it was very, very funny. There's a person from
Axis of Awesome.
Yeah,
Jordan?
It's either Jordan or Jordan, and that's why I'm stumbling around the name. But they were incredible. They finished the rebuttal for the playing is better than watching team.
Yep.
And so much of it, I think, was just off the cuff. It was fucking great. And I've seen some Axis of Awesome musical pieces before, and I've never really been grabbed by them. I just feel like they're a little bit easy, a little bit not really my style of humor.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? When you compare it to something like Tripod or Flight of Conchords or something like that.
I get that.
But this was so, so good. It's just like stream of consciousness rant, like fucking hilarious. Mm.
It's interesting when you see people only as a group and then you see like their solo work.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, this is what I bring to the team, but this is who I am when I do my own stuff.
Yeah. And like, I mean, Bernie Burns was also there, and that's another example of that, right? Like, I know him from scripted comedy for the most part. And then to see him do a more presentational style of comedy that's a little bit more stand-up-y, that was also really like interesting.
Yeah, sure. Whenever you see people in new situations, you can always capture new experiences from them. Because different stimuli just create different outputs. That's how that works. Things go in, things go out.
As if I couldn't love Rumi enough already, one of the devs for Rumi was on the team as well. Mm-hmm. Also very funny. It's just sometimes when I'm at PAX, I look at a panel and I ask myself, am I spending my time effectively? Because there's so much here that you want to do.
Yep.
And sometimes I dig my own grave for myself because I'll avoid stuff that I think will be fun for something that I think will be more worthwhile. I end up shooting myself in the foot because I'm wrong about it and all that kind of thing. But this great debate, I was tossing up whether to go to it because it's just a bit of comedy. I can see that on YouTube anytime I want. But yeah, I'm really, really glad I went to that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's good. Having a good time at PAX is important. Having a good time with games is important. Good, positive times.
Yeah.
But I think that's enough for now. Because I've got nothing else to say. I need to absorb more so I can excrete it outwards towards your ears.
You can find us at our normal places, at SlowpokesCast, SlowpokesPodcast.com, Facebook.com/SlowpokesPodcast.
Yeah, so that's that from us.
Yeah, I've been David.
I've been John.
Thanks for joining us at PAX.